You're watching Notepad. I'm your host, Ibrahim Sani. Today, we shall look at the general overview of Budget 2022. Over the past few days, we have been discussing the tax policy, the general implication of Budget 2022. Right now, we're looking at control mechanism of the delivery of the budget. Quite interestingly, during the budget presentation, the Finance Minister, Tengku Zafrul, did say that there will be a new committee to be instituted, to be managed by the MOF and to be chaired by the Prime Minister to look at who gets what during the budget.
To help ease cash flow of Malaysians impacted by lockdowns, EPF has agreed for the contribution rates to stay at 9%. This, according to Tengku Zafrul, will provide 2 billion ringgit to the people. 600,000 new job opportunities will be created under the Jamin Kerja Initiative. Employers who recruit those who are not actively working with a monthly salary of 1,500 ringgit and above will enjoy 20% and 30% in salary incentives. The government will expand the sugar tax. Excise duty will be imposed on malt, cocoa and chocolate beverages in order to compel Malaysians towards a healthier lifestyle. The government also plans to impose excise duty on liquid or gel products containing nicotine used for e-cigarettes and vapes. Sales tax exemption for passenger vehicles assembled in Malaysia will be extended till June next year. Imported vehicles will also be given a 50% discount in sales tax. To spur the property segment, there will be no real property gains tax or RPGT for properties sold after the 6th year. The government will impose a one-off special tax for high-income companies earning 100 million ringgit and more to increase funds for those affected by COVID-19. The tax will be 24% for the first 100 million ringgit and 33% for the rest above that. In a bid to empower women, all public listed companies will have to appoint at least one female board member by September next year. The government has also set aside 2 billion ringgit for employment of housewives, single mothers and unemployed women.
What makes this a little bit interesting is that one wonders whether or not such a committee did exist in the previous budgets before this. And if there wasn't one, why hasn't there been one? And of course, what would this special committee do moving forward? Joining us is the non-executive chairman of Tricom Malaysia, Dr. Varinderjit Singh. He's also the MIGPA president, as well as the Malaysian Institute of Accountant, MIA president as well. Dr. Varinder, thanks for joining us. Let's do a quick overview into what you think of the announcement following the Budget 2022 when it comes to the delivery of the budget goodies, so to speak.
Thank you, Ibrahim, for having me. And very quickly, when you look at the budget, like in most other budgets, there's lots of allocations, lots of funding, lots of initiatives. And the challenge is always about delivery and whether the right audience gets the benefit of those particular grants or cash transfers or payments. And so that's always been a challenge. It's not something new. So that's why having some kind of a committee to manage this makes sense, but I think it has been there before. This is not the first time. It's just that you want a little bit more accountability. I think one of the messages you are getting from this particular budget is there's a lot more emphasis on transparency and whether in the future or whether now, a lot more compared to in the past. And transparency in the sense that we will do more. We will have committees. We will have the Prime Minister chairing this to make sure we get it right. And then the other one was on the pre-budget statement that all of us were aware of. First time we've had such a pre-budget statement, which gave us an inkling of what's going to come in the budget. And the other element there is the expenditure statement that has been mentioned in the future, will be issued in the future, and also the Fiscal Responsibility Act. So we're beginning to see in this particular budget a lot more focus on sharing more and doing a bit more in the context of transparency and making sure that our right audience gets the benefits of this particular budget allocations or initiatives. So I think that's to be lauded. I mean, that's great. It's just at the end of the day, you have to measure it by the actual output. and see whether it really works. But I think it's a positive statement, positive direction, and let's see how that progresses in the years to come.
Well, not letting go of Budget 2021 and the existing budget that we're going through right now, there hasn't been much talk about the KPI or the report card following this. What's your thought on this?
Yeah, so connected with that is this issue about the KPI shouldn't be simply a KPI of the Ministry of Finance. It should be all ministries which are given allocations, which is the norm. All ministries need to be accountable in terms of how that funding or allocation given to each ministry has been utilized and whether there is the input-output kind of a measurement is instituted. And this is where we sometimes get a very weak link. You've got allocations, you've got projects to do, and then the question is, was the delivery of that done effectively? Was the project up to the mark? Did we spend how we should be spending it? Is where we don't get report cards. So I believe the report cards or the KPIs should be to each relevant ministry, which becomes accountable. If I allocate 100 million here, 100 a billion here, I need to have an accountability. And of course, the Ministry of Finance is the final arbiter in terms of whether that allocation went effectively, was it delivered effectively. So it's a lot of work. But unfortunately, I think what happens is that when allocations are made, you leave it to the ministries to do the necessary work. And perhaps the Ministry of Finance should do a little bit more focus. And the other things we hear a lot about is the Auditor General reporting subsequently. Yeah. And then talking to us about, and this is consistent, I think, as you have seen in all Auditor General's report, talking a bit of wastage, talking a bit of we could have done better, losses, things not being done on a timely basis. And so we need to put an end to this kind of thing. I to be fair, there are situations where you can get some wastage, some losses, but that's fine, as long as it's far less than what we are hearing.
So we're looking at three big ingredients here. The Auditor General continuous report on wastages and malfeasance in terms of managing the finances of the country. That's one. Another aspect is KPI on current or previous budgets. And the third, of course, on the delivery of the budget. It seems like all this points to the Fiscal Responsibility Act that has been mooted by the finance minister. In fact, in the budget statement, he says that there is a public consultation paper that has been put out and that from the year 2022, quote, which is the year for economic recovery, reforms and fiscal consolidation will be initiated to rebuild the country's fiscal resilience. Do you feel that a lot is now hinged upon the Fiscal Responsibility Act, its possible enactment and eventual endorsement by the parliament? We need the Fiscal Responsibility Act now more than ever.
Yes, I certainly think that it's a very, very positive sign that finally we are seeing some light in terms of the Fiscal Responsibility Act being enacted in 2022. In the past, it was being talked about, and especially by the Pakatan government, Arapan government. And so it is now coming to some fruition, which is good. And so I think a lot hinges on it because you can have all kinds of legislation. And in the end of the day, is there actual implementation? How do you actualize and operationalize whatever you have stated in a legislation? So it is positive, but we need to perhaps wait and see and allow it to be applied in due course. And this is where I believe that the media has a bigger role in terms of looking at accountability, looking at does things work, has the act functioned well, and perhaps to educate the public as well as to the value of a Fiscal Responsibility Act. So accountability is the key, but in the end of the day, it is the delivery of it, and this act will talk about the roles and responsibilities of the various parties, right? And what they can do and they cannot do. So it's really setting the goalposts, and then somebody has to monitor it. And at the end of the day, I do believe that it may come back to the Auditor General monitoring the actual implementation of the various goalposts or the milestones that have been set by the FRA or Fiscal Responsibility Act.
All right, we'll go for one short break before we continue our conversation with Dr. Virendrajit Singh. Welcome back. I have with me Tricor Non-Executive Chairman, Dr. Virendrajit Singh. Dr. Virinder, we need to talk about the tax expenditure statement. This is a long-term conversation that needs to be had in this country. We've seen a few countries, particularly those that have performed accrual accounting for the longest of time. New Zealand, for instance, if you type in tax expenditure statement, New Zealand's 2021 tax expenditure statement is all for there to see. Anybody, not even New Zealanders, of course. And for the fact that we have not seen a clear-cut tax expenditure statement reported annually, particularly during budget season, is befuddling, to be frank. But so, when the Finance Minister, Tengku Zafrul, wants to do this, it's well lauded by a lot of commentators, including yourself and myself as well. And the fact that the government will publish the tax expenditure statement in an effort to improve fiscal discipline, this supplements the mid-term to long-term revenue strategy program that the government has. Do you feel that we're going to take a lot from the tax expenditure statement, and this constitutes further to our idea of improving transparency and accountability?
Yes. One of the things to bear in mind is that tax expenditure statement was actually an item that was in the, suggested by the Tax Reform Committee, of which I was a member a couple of years ago. Mm. And this is actually looking at developed world countries and looking at, look, if you give a special incentive, if you give a double deduction, what's going to be the cost of that? And what is the revenue that we'll forego by giving that particular deduction? And so we'll have line by line for each initiative, what is the impact in terms of the revenue foregone? And or what is expected to be the revenue that you probably would have got, but because you're giving it away, so this is it. So this will give you an idea, at least at first cut, of how much of revenue we will be foregoing by doing this kind of expenditure. So to me, it is great for analysts, it's great for economists to look at this, and it gives you an opportunity to actually look at the input-output measurements, right? The amount that you have, you initiated something, this is what will happen, projected to happen in terms of potential loss, right? And then the next issue is, did it reach the level you expected? Did you achieve the output? Now, who is going to measure the output is another story. This fundamentally just tells us a little bit more in the context of transparency and accountability to say, we have accounted for line-by-line items, what the cost will be. Mm. So I think it's more positive, and it will also give a lot of impetus, perhaps, to even researchers who want to do a lot more research in terms of the government spending. So I see it positive in many ways. But again, remember this, it's purely pieces of information that have been given. Anything is better than nothing. In the past, we never knew this. We know incentives have been given, this has been given, but no measurement was ever made about the potential cost. You just have to work out some possible damage, what we think we'll lose, but no tangible data was available or even looked at. So what this means also is that the type of data that the Ministry of Finance will use to measure this potential loss is also important. And therefore, the kind of solutions they use, the kind of predictive ability that they have, means they need to have much more better data. So I think it will lead to that kind of a situation. And I think it's positive on all fronts. And so we'll just have to wait to see how this evolves over time. But certainly, I applaud it. It's a great step forward in accountability.
All right. We'll go for one short break before we continue our conversation with Dr. Virendrajit Singh. Dr. Virinder, we move into economics right now. This is following Tengku Zafrul's statement following the budget. In a lot of the media rounds that he had, he was actually quite pleased that the debt ceiling was increased to 65% of the GDP. He argues that this is to have larger wiggle room for the government to finance the budget. He says that although the government's debt ceiling was raised to 65%, what's more important was the government's ability to repay the loan. He was also arguing that if we were to pull the brake too fast and not spend and not have an expansionary budget, then this would impede on our economy having a faster than expected recovery path. Do you share this kind of views?
In general, I think we do agree that an expansionary budget was the only way to go, given what has happened and the turmoil that COVID-19 has brought to us all. So it is necessary there be expansionary. And in order to be expansionary, the issue was obviously a deficit will not be at the 3% that we used to bendy about in the past. So I think it was necessary. They needed the headspace. They needed to be able to do a bit more, and in terms of borrow a little bit more to make up for that. So to me, it is a temporary measure that we needed, and I think it's fine. It gives the government space. And that was why all parties, in parliament, agreed to give that particular space to the government because of the circumstances. In normal circumstances, I don't think the parliament would be all on would be approving this, but I think it's necessary, and I think it's right for the minister to be a little bit excited about the fact that this is moving along smoothly. But the challenge will then be the future years, and then we'll bring it back to the norm that we are used to.
Speaking about future years, Dr. Varinda, assuming that the GDP growth is between 5.5 to 5.6%, we're going to be looking at a deficit of 6.0%, which is lower than the 6.5% that we have right now. Do you feel that this is a good trajectory, even though we're on a path of recovery, even though the debt ceiling has been raised, and even though we have an expansionary budget, the goal towards a balanced budget is there when it comes to 2021 versus 2022. What's your thoughts on this?
Well, I think the expectation by many was that if we are on a trajectory of an upward trajectory and moving out of what we've gone through so far, and this would be growth, then perhaps the deficit can be lowered. But that's too early to expect it, because why? Our revenue generation is still uncertain. We expect less than 6% growth in the revenue next year. And again, that's tied to the expected economic growth, right? So I think we need to be a little bit more cautious. And the deficit of 6 that is projected seems reasonable given the circumstances. One of the points I've made to the ministry is the fact that what happens if we do have the flip side? What happens if growth rates actually drop? What happens if there is another blip? And we don't like to be doomsayers, but in the end of the day, we need to have some kind of an alternative. But unfortunately, I don't think we all want to get ourselves stuck up in as being naysayers and saying that there could be a worse scenario. But that is a danger, that if we do find ourselves back in a situation where the pandemic evolves, the mutation of the virus, and so on, and there's some more of lockdown, maybe not lockdowns, but curtailment, and we'll find that this particular deficit will widen again. And that leads us to more challenges for the succeeding year. But in general, given the data, given what is happening around the world, given what we've seen, it looks reasonable to me to expect a very conservative figure of 6% deficit. If things go well, we might see the deficit being even lesser. And I've also raised one other point to the ministry in a session we had today about the fact that we expect revenue to grow by less than 6%. But I find that operating expenditure is growing more than 6%.
Yeah.
That's true.
And the challenge there for us is this. There is always, and this is human nature, in a sense that if things are going back to what we think it is, we want to spend what we used to spend. And we want to bring back certain expenditure. And my comments were, maybe it's too early, too fast. Why can't we keep the expenditure at about the 2021 level or 2020 levels? And let's not jump in it too fast. But again, some of the expenditure may be related to some of the cash handouts, some of the expenditure that has been mentioned in the budget. Mm. So I think all I can say is that we need to be cautious. Human beings are such that when you see something positive, everything becomes positive. Great to have that positive spirit. But as you and I would know that as accountants as well, you need to have always some kind of a worst case scenario and a best case scenario and have some scenario analysis. So I hope that doesn't happen. But I was hopeful that the government can manage operating expenditure.
Mm.
And this has been one of our bugbears, in a sense, in the past,
yeah.
How the operating expenditure is keep shooting up. So we hope that works. And if that works well, we will see the deficit being a bit less than what we projected.
Which is falling back to the earlier statement of transparency, accountability, and fiscal responsibility. Dr. Virinder, there's still so much more to unpack. Unfortunately, our conversation must draw to a close for now, but I'm happy to have you on this show yet again. That was Dr. Virinder Jit Singh, the non-executive chairman of Tricom Malaysia. You can also catch him on various platforms. He's a quite prolific speaker, so do search his name all around the web. For now, that's it for this episode. Catch you in the next one.